This is The Huddle. It's awful. Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Let's go eat.
The Huddle.
Listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. We're going to be recapping last week's, well, Monday night's win over the Denver Broncos. Then we're going to be looking ahead. We got player guests, Tariq Woolen, Phil Haynes going to join us. You're going to hear from Geno Smith at the podium. Steve Rabel, Ray Roberts going to join us. Before we get to any of it, Dave and Bump, I have one bit of bad news, one bit of good news. Let's start with the good news here. Sean Alexander, this from Lumen Field. Sean Alexander will be inducted into the Seahawks Ring of Honor in October at Lumen Field.
Nope.
We'll go that way. We'll have Bump take over.
Yeah, Sean Alexander. You know what? Sean Alexander was my introduction to Seahawk football. Like, he's the first player I associate with Seahawk football with Sean Alexander. I remember his thick old elbow pads and stuff. His running style was a bit different, and it makes sense that he gets inducted, man. He's the running back with most valuable player in 2005, offensive player of the year in 2005, all pro in 05, second team all pro in 04, three-time pro bowler. I mean, it only makes sense that this man gets in, so good for him. 9,000 yards, 100 touchdowns, 215 receptions. He did it all.
I remember a game at Arizona, and I think he was sick at halftime or something. I think before the half, he had to go in and get something for his stomach or something like that. And he comes out and runs an 88-yard touchdown in the third quarter. And I was just like, wow. And the acceleration and, you know, running behind those guys. I remember another time in 2004, they did not pick up a first down. And I was shocked. And they had to kick a field goal. They ended up losing to the Redskins at the time. And it was Max Strong at fullback. It was an I formation. Max Strong, and it went over the left side. So it was Steve Hutchinson and Walter Jones, and they didn't pick up the first down.
Wow.
And I was like, it was like Tyler Lockett dropping a pass.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you just never see that. And I was like, wow, that was pretty awesome by their defense, you know, because you had those guys up front who were so good. And, you know, Walt gets so much deserved praise because he's so good, but Hutch was really a good guard too.
Yeah.
And then you had Max Strong leading the way, and they couldn't pick it up. So yeah, but sometimes that's the kind of player he was. I think that you were like shocked if Sean didn't get like a 10-yard game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the all-time leading rusher for the Seattle Seahawks in franchise history, Sean Alexander, will be inducted into the Ring of Honor in October. That news from the Seahawks and Lumen Field breaking just a couple minutes ago, breaking earlier last hour, by the way. And now let me get to the bad news. This is from Ian Rappaport, not confirmed by the Seahawks yet, but Ian Rappaport saying that Jamal Adams will have season-ending surgery to repair a torn quad tendon. Wyman, I'll start with you for this one. But, I mean, the impact on the defense without Jamal, should he be done for the season?
Yeah, it's just such a shame, man. I don't know what to say about it. You go back and look at, like, his record in college. He played 3 years at LSU, never missed a game.
Yeah.
He didn't miss any games in New York, maybe two, I think, the entire time mm-hmm. he was there. So he's just not been an injury guy. And now it's been nothing but injuries, even in the really good year that he had. Remember, he ended up screwing up his shoulder.
Yeah.
He played in the playoff game, but he, you know, he couldn't make tackles, couldn't cover. There was a couple of times where you could just tell that he had his arm strapped to his side. The guy is such a good player. It's such a shame, man. Luckily they had some guys that played like Josh Jones that played really well in the preseason. But yeah, it's a huge loss, no matter what. That's the most disappointing part of, you know, you have a new defensive coordinator. You got these new coaches coming in. It looks like everything's going to be so much better than it was last year, and you just expect to have those guys on your defense, and it's just so disappointing.
Ugh. Jamal Adams has, you're right, Dave, missed just two games over three seasons with the New York Jets. Assuming this is a season-ending injury, it will be 25 games missed with Seattle over three seasons. Bump.
Yeah. Dave, we know injuries happen, right? It's going to happen in someone's career. The worst part is when they happen back to back to back, and then it happened while he was making a play, too, and you watched the play. It didn't even seem like anything crazy happened. That's how fluke these things are. And I look at the defense, and I love what they were doing with him. And he was lined up at linebacker at the time. They still had two safeties over the top, and I'm like, I like this look down here. You allow Jamal to be aggressive. I think he's better in the box, like the hook-to-curl area. I feel like he'd do great there. So when I saw this in camp, then I saw it against the Broncos, and on that play, I saw the Packs and go, oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. Let me see what Jamal does. And then he makes a play. You don't know what exactly happened to him. He's limping off the field. And the first thing I do is just feel for him, man. I'm like, mm-hmm. The last thing you want to do as an athlete is go out there and get hurt. very first game of the year, didn't play in the preseason for this reason, and then goes out, and it's just unfortunate, man.
It's almost like his brain tells his body to do things that it can't do. You know, that's
like he's so competitive.
Well, it's just like I don't know. I mean, the human body has, you know, restrictions on, and I feel like his brain moves so fast because he took like a weird little step there, which he needed to take because Russ was trying to juke him. And, you know, so his leg goes out, and I feel like that's where it happened. Mm-hmm. So he reacted so quick to Russell Wilson that, you know, like I said, I think he just outplays his own body sometimes, man, because the guy is just electric. And you know, he loves football. You can tell, and when he talks about football, it reflects the way he plays on the field. It's just pure energy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was the latest news. Again, the good news, Sean Alexander will be inducted into the Seahawks Ring of Honor in October. That confirmed by the team. Not yet confirmed by the team, though, a report this morning from multiple outlets, including NFL Network, is that Jamal Adams is done for the season and will have season-ending surgery on a torn quad tendon. So let's move on for right now. We got plenty to look forward to. Before we look forward, though, let's look back. Monday Night Football, a win over the Denver Broncos. Seahawks were near 7-point underdogs, and instead, they pull it off. Let's start with Geno Smith. Bump, you want to get us started on Geno? Because I already know who I'm going to for Cody.
Geno, love what I saw from Geno. Obviously, starts off 13 of 13 and looked like he was in complete control. I mean, his very first touchdown to Will Disley was composure at his finest, right? Travis Homer gets blown up trying to pick up a blitz. A guy gets thrown into Geno. Geno escapes it. Looks like he's on the run. Keeps his eyes downfield and flicks it over the top. Like, that play alone, I'm thinking, okay, Geno's comfortable. Because if he wasn't there, he would have panicked, would have got tackled. But other than that, it's how quickly he got the ball out of his hands. How he walks up to the line of scrimmage. I saw him check out of a couple plays and check into something else. If he didn't, then it was dummy calls, and it fooled me, and it might have fooled that defense. He just seemed like a guy that Shane Waldron and Pete Carroll trust. And I think that was the main thing. They're like, all right, can we trust you to get in and out of plays, to get the ball out on time, to take care of the football? Dave, I don't think there was one pass where I thought, okay, that one was close. Maybe the pass to DK when they threw him inside and there's a guy on his hip, but I realized where and why he threw it there. But I didn't, at no point did I think, Geno, this is too much for Geno.
No.
What were you going to say there?
I was going to say there's one that sailed over Penny, I think. Like
that was his first incompletion.
Yeah, there was only one that I could think of where it's like no one really has a shot at that or there was a miscommunication, but did he surprise you with his play?
Totally. I mean, he looked good in the preseason, but this was a different level, man.
Yeah.
First of all, the Disley touchdown, I just want to give a shout-out to Homer, Travis Homer, for taking one for the team.
Sure did.
He got annihilated, uh-huh. but he did enough. And, you know, for Geno to keep his eyes up while scrambling, that was the most impressive thing to me. I thought the throw back to Will Disley was ill-advised. I mean, it was a pass interference. Mm-hmm. You know what's weird about that play? Rashad Penny was over there.
Yes, he was.
Wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what happened there. But so there was it was 2-on-1. But, yeah, I thought Geno was really like a different player, man. He really was, you know, just beyond what we've seen anything from him. So, and it's just interesting because we talk about baseball players like a guy, Paul Sewald, who comes in, he's 30 years old,
uh-huh.
and, you know, all of a sudden it clicks for him at a certain point. In football, it just doesn't happen that way, right? I mean, it's like your second year, your third year. Well, this is Geno's 10th year, and, you know, it's clicking for him. Like, he all of a sudden is – now, we got to see him put together back-to-back, you know, games, but I'm going to get too excited. But, you know, and the other thing was somebody said, well, he wasn't very good in the second half. I'm like, you got one ball tipped, and without that tip, if that's a catch, he would have been 63% completion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the offense kind of shut down in the second half. But, man, he looked really good. Now, we got to see it again and again. And we'll see what happens, you know, how he responds to adversity. But I would say that first touchdown pass to Will Disley was a pretty good sign of how he – because his running back got trucked there. Yeah. And, you know, he was able to move and keep his eyes up. I was really impressed.
Most important play of the game. Well, I don't want to say most important. It's a team win. But it might have been Cody Barton's hit on Javonte Williams to keep that screen from just exploding. Yeah. I mean, what did you see from his reaction there? Yeah. Other than it being perfectly timed.
Yeah, Cody just, that's a hard play to play. I mean, you've seen it over the last couple years. You have to be physical, you know, with a screen. And my thing was always, I'm going to go up and hit somebody first. And that's kind of what Cody's thing is, mm-hmm. hit first and then figure out where the running back is. KJ had a super good knack for that, playing the screens. But, yeah, Cody had a really good game. I mean, what do you say? He went out and did what he's done every time he's gotten an opportunity. He plays with a lot of energy. He takes on blockers. He wants to hit people. That's what it's all about. I'm sorry. You know, you can't be a finesse player on defense. So, yeah, it was he was good. I thought, you know, there was a couple things with Jordan Brooks where, you know, he missed a tackle or two and, you know, was kind of, you know, got hooked one time. And there was a lots of stuff that happened on the edge that can be fixed.
All right. Tariq Woolen joins us next. Don't go anywhere. This is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. We're going to be joined here in just a little bit by cornerback Tariq Woolen to hear about his very exciting week one and a look ahead to week two. Very quickly here, I do have an official roster move from the Seahawks. The Seahawks have placed safety Jamal Adams on the injured reserve Thursday. So, again, nothing here yet, like confirming that his season's over. The injured reserve requires a minimum of 4 weeks, though obviously the reports out of NFL Network being that his season is done. So at the very least, he has officially been placed on the injured reserve. Meanwhile, the Seahawks have signed safety Tease Tabor off of Atlanta's practice squad. Let's look ahead to week two. The Seahawks are going to be on the road against the San Francisco 49ers in this one. Dave, tell me if you agree. Bump and I earlier were saying it feels like the run on either side is going to be the story of week two.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's they have such a good run game, and you saw what Elijah Mitchell did.
Yeah.
Now he's hurt, right?
Yeah.
He's out for a number of weeks, or what the
2 months
status? Yeah. So that's part of. So Kyle Shanahan, his father, obviously Mike Shanahan, had that run game with Alex Gibbs in Denver, where you just plug a guy in.
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of what they have, because remember they had Raheem Mostert that year they went to the Super Bowl. Trying to remember the other
Wilson Jr.
Oh yeah, Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, and I remember listening to an update from C. Raj. I think it was during the 2020 season, and he's like, "Have yourself a day." And Jeff Wilson Jr. had like 3 touchdowns,
yeah,
or something like that against the Patriots. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing that they have been able to just, you know, duplicate that same thing. But they got Kyle Juszczyk, Kittle. I mean, they've got great personnel. I feel like no matter what, there's going to be a run threat. And the good news is, you know, I talked to yesterday to Quentin Jefferson, and those guys really take a lot of pride in that. And in the second half, the first play or second play, I did a football 101 on it, that those guys inside, it was Puna, I think it was Shelby Harris, and then, you know, I can't remember, oh, it was Big Al Woods. Mm-hmm. They just entirely placed their offensive line in the backfield, mm-hmm, and they ended up with a 2-yard loss there. So they've done a really good job of taking pride, because it's tough with a 3-4. You have one less offensive lineman. You know, you can get run on. It's more of a pass type of defense, and those guys did a really good job. Now, I'd say, like, for Daryl Taylor, he had a couple of, you know, times where he was flowing too fast. Mm-hmm. You know, they're probably going to see that, and they're going to test him. So there was a couple times. Uchenna obviously was really good, and he really started that whole play that they got a 2-yard loss on. But, you know, I think that's where it's going to have to start. The linebackers are going to have to be really disciplined, because – whoever they plug in back there, they've got a really good, solid running game. And apparently it didn't hurt them, because they have the loss of Mike McDaniel, and he was sort of seen as the run guru. But, you know, they have a system there that is just continuing on without him.
Well, and also what San Francisco now has that they didn't necessarily to the same extent with Jimmy G is a quarterback who can pick up yards with his legs. I mean, yeah. Trey Lance led the team in rushing against Chicago. It wasn't an exceptional day for rushing for either team, whether, you know, understanding, you know, that situation. But Seattle's had this advantage before, especially when Russell Wilson was younger, as it keeps defenses on their toes. Bump, what's the kind of challenge that Seattle's going to have with Trey Lance, who can also run the ball and scramble if he needs to?
Yeah, when you have a quarterback who can run the football, he's in the run game. You know, they're gonna leave the DN unblocked and option off of him. You know, they're going to make that DN have to make a decision. And with that, there's going to be play fakes, there's going to be boots, all of that stuff. Like, these DNs are going to get a lot of work, and really going to, not DNs, it'll be our edge rushers, be DT and Uchenna, their discipline is going to be tested. And you can't forget Deebo Samuel, man, who's a receiver who they're going to motion in the backfield. They're going to give him the football. He had 8 for 52, averaged 6.5 and a touchdown. Dave talked about that system. It's a system where you just plug it in and you play. They're going to pull guards. They're going to pull tackles. They're going to motion your fullback outside. They're going to bring him back inside. They're going to do what I call a boom block, which is bring the tight end from one side and block that D. And after you've left him on block for five or six plays in a row, like they do so many things in the run game that tests a defense discipline. And it plays with your eyes, right? You got guys crossing everywhere. It tests like, okay, am I going to read my key? Am I going to get to where I'm supposed to be? So they have to be disciplined. And honestly, I imagine a day where Shane Waldron's offense has a little bit more of this, too, in his game, the shifts, the motions. I told Stace earlier, Dave, I go, what you see is not what you're going to get at your initial look at the offense. You're like, all right, this is the picture now. Wait a couple seconds. Somebody's going to move. Someone's going to set up in a different area. And then you have to adjust and communicate with your other defenders out there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The run game you wouldn't think would be that complicated. But if you wanted to, like, sit down and nerd out with one of their coaches, they would tell you that, you know, all the motion and the shifting and everything creates angles, like blocking angles.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a guy's head up on you and you have to, you know, block him to the left, it's going to be a battle, but they get it so either the player shifts because of the motion or whatever, and it creates the angle that they want. So it's really, you know, kind of detailed and, frankly, quite boring stuff. You know, if you're really
I think it's interesting.
I love it.
If you sat in a film room, probably, but that's kind of what they do. It's very technical. So, yeah, it's been, like I said, I was there with Mike Shanahan, and, you know, we had Terrell Davis came in. He was like a sixth, seventh, eighth rounder back when they had like 12 rounds in the draft, and man, his rookie year, he ran his tail off in that run scheme. So kind of similar compared, you know, as far as and Kyle Shanahan, by the way, was like a little snot-nosed 16-year-old boy.
I can't believe some of the people that you've just been running around. Like, it's crazy. Like, hearing, was it you that said when we were talking about the hardest person to tackle? And who did you say?
Barry Sanders.
That blows my mind. He played for the Lions.
Did he?
Played for the Lions.
I just saw a highlight package of him, and oh my God. I'll tell that story really quick, but
yeah.
If you had the backside B gap and he ran the other way to the outside, all week long we practiced. It was like
Still
a Top Gun. Don't leave your wingman. I'm not leaving my wingman. I'm not leaving the B gap. Sure enough, he'd come all the way back, and somebody who had the backside B gap or C gap would make the tackle. And we actually held him to, I think, 90 yards rushing.
It's a good day.
Which is pretty amazing.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We are going to be right back with Tariq Woolen, and this is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Rost. And right now, Phil Haynes, guard Phil Haynes, joining us. Phil, what an exciting week one. All of America watching you guys go out there and upset the Broncos. Did it feel validating? Like, you seem like a really chill guy who, like, you don't have, like, you know, like this vengeful vibe about you. But was it still validating to come in as the underdog and win?
I think it was. I mean, you're trying to listen to the noise, but people are writing us off. And to come in and win week one, that was a great feeling.
Man, what I love about week one is that you don't really know what you're going to get, right? You watch film, you're like, okay, I think they're going to come out in this when we come out in that. Was there anything that the Broncos did that you didn't prepare for? And if they did show you something, what's that communication like with the line?
I think our coaches always do a great job preparing us. And like you said, week one, you never really know. But I think they did come up with a couple things. But of course, we're on the next week. But Austin Blythe does a great job of just getting us all on the same page. And we have a smart O-line, and we just really did a good job of understanding what they're trying to do.
Yeah, how tough was that? Like, as far as their defense goes, like you said, you didn't really know what you were going to get. Were you looking at film of, you know, wherever the coach came from and stuff like that? It's always tough in week one, right?
Yeah, it is always tough. But I mean, it's kind of easy when we have, like, Shelby in the room, too,
because
he just comes and tells us kind of what their scheme is, like, what they want like to do. But, yeah, we normally just look at, like, the coach's, like, family tree and, like, where they come from. Yeah.
Now, you probably have a lot of these moments. You guys had a great game on offense. But was there one moment in the game maybe where either a great block, a great, you know, run, whatever it is, and you were like, I feel really proud of myself, like, this feels good in this moment?
I wouldn't say so for myself. I was more happy for as a team getting the win, for sure. But I mean, Kobe's touchdown was amazing. We're doing a good job in pass for all day, and then him scoring that touchdown was an amazing feeling for me, just seeing him grow and mature as a player.
Yeah, probably really satisfying, too, to just ever see it pay off with a touchdown, right? It's so hard.
Absolutely.
You seem like a chill dude, man, and When I was in high school, I asked my coach to play one play on the line just so I can feel it, right? Got pancaked, of course, right? Just drove to the ground. Much respect to the offensive lineman. But there's so much contact with you guys. Do you talk a little bit, or do you kind of just do your job and get back to the huddle?
Yeah, I'm not a talker. I just do my job, get back to the huddle. That's all I really do.
Can you imagine if Phil, you seem so nice, if Phil was actually like the worst on the field?
I've seen dudes flip that switch. I've
seen it. Jawing nonstop. They're like, oh, you guys talk to Phil Haynes? He's awful.
I'm telling you, the nice guys always scare me the most.
Right.
Because when
right.
I flip the switch, it's bad news.
Silent assassin.
That's right.
There you go.
Right. That's the way to be. Absolutely. Well, what about what about the two young fellas? Those guys played really well, and you know them coming into the system and everything. I like. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think Abraham Lucas is kind of grumpy. He looks like he might be like he looks pissed off.
Yeah,
and I mean, love that.
Yeah, in meetings I look over, he just looks mean. I'm like, dude, smile. No, but he's a great guy. I mean, they're both coming along really well in the system, and they're getting better every day. I'm very excited for them.
Both those guys grayed out pretty well.
Think so. Yeah, absolutely.
If I walk through, like, who's the this, who's the this, would you be able to tell me on the line or in the offensive line room, like, who's the funniest?
Funniest? Gabe Jackson, for sure.
Okay. who can be the toughest?
The toughest, Austin Blythe.
Austin Blythe? Mm-hmm. Who was the most intimidating for you to be around at first, maybe? Because you're a younger guy. I mean, you've been here a while, but still, some of these guys older.
Most intimidating? That's tough. I think I might say me, because I don't really talk much. And,
nice.
I'm a little hard on some people sometimes. So.
Who do you hang out with most?
Jake Curran.
Okay. So. Nice.
There you go. So you born in North Kakalaki,
mm-hmm.
went to Wake Forest, and now you're up here in the Northwest. I got family down south, right? And I go down there, I spend time with them. Mississippi is different, and they're always making fun of me how I talk and all that stuff. What's it like coming from there up here to the Northwest?
It's different. The food's obviously different. The weather's a little bit different, too. It's not as hot and humid, but, I mean, I love it up here. It's a great place. A lot of guys retire here, so I see why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your major at Wake Forest?
Communications.
Oh, okay. So, there you go. Mm-hmm. Me too. You too?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah.
Not me.
Someday you'll be sitting here.
Well, hopefully so.
Yeah. After like 15 years, couple Super Bowls, Pro Bowls. Yeah. Exactly. Take your time.
Yeah.
Well, what do you see about, do you look at other teams, like schemes and stuff? Because we're talking about the San Francisco 49er running game and how they try to create angles and with all their motion and shifting and stuff like that. Do you look at, when you're watching film, you know, because I know you get a chance to watch opposing offenses right. because you're watching the last three games and stuff like that. Do you have any, teams or is San Francisco, like, particularly impressive watching their offense?
I do like watching their offense. What they do with 44, don't know if it's name. He's a great player, and like how they toss the ball out, and it's really interesting to see how they do stuff. It's a little different than how we did it when I first got here, but we're kind of incorporating some of that stuff in the offense.
What play just gets you going when you hear it in the huddle? You don't have to call out the whole play, but just a basic run. Is it power, counter, zone? Yeah. What do you like most?
Power and counter.
All day. You gotta move it.
Yeah, you got to love it, man.
Yes, sir.
Either guard spot, just blocking down or pulling. I love pulling. So it's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we got to let you go. Before we do, I have one final question. I saved like a non-football question. You mentioned the food here being different. What's one food? It could be a restaurant, a food item, whatever, that you really liked up here and one that you miss from back home?
The seafood up here is amazing. It's just way different. It's way better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Things I miss back home is the grits.
That checks out. All right. He is Phil Haynes, Seahawks guard. Phil, thanks so much for taking the time, man. This has been fun.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate you, bro.
All right. We're going to be joined in just a minute here by Tariq Woolen, cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks. And Tariq walking in here now. Tariq, a big game against the Denver Broncos. He is a starter as a rookie against Denver. Had 34 coverage snaps, 3 targets, 0 catches allowed, a 39.6 passer rating allowed. Tariq, nicely done.
Appreciate it.
Very excited to have you here on the huddle. Now, you don't strike me as being very nervous. Were you nervous?
A little bit, not really. I feel like the 3 preseason games helped. The only thing that was different was just the loudness of the crowd. But I know just walking out there, it didn't feel real at first and warm ups. But like other than that, I felt good going in.
Man, I've been referencing you for a couple months now. Whenever we get on a show and someone is like retracting what they're doing, they get into a backpedal. Like, oh, he's backpedaling. Like, oh, he's on that Tariq Woolen backpedal. He back it up. He's retracting what he's saying. This because I love your game, man. I know that you play receiver first and then you shift over to the DB position. Mm-hmm. And when I saw you got drafted, I'm like 4'2", 40 with like 6'4" or something like that. I'm like, I just want to see what he looks like on the field. And on Monday, you just look comfortable. You made a play where you sealed the edge, boom, put a dude on his butt, bam, made the tackle, and you came off. I'm like, oh, that's a stinger right there. He got into it. What was it like just being out there in the NFL? Like, I'm a corner in the league. That had to be a great moment for you.
Yeah, it was just because, you know, it was just my first game. You're going against Russell, and then you're going against a good group of receivers. So just being able to make plays, that's all I wanted to do. And, you know, I never wanted to overthink anything and be like, oh, I got to make this play, this play. I just was trying to, you know, make plays and, like, the ones that came to me. And that was one that came to me, and, shoot, I had to set the edge. And I just made a play. And, shoot, you know, sometimes you just get banged up a little bit,
that's
but I was up. Good.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Please keep doing that. That was my favorite play of the whole game.
An old school linebacker right here.
Who was the guy you dumped? Was it Hamler?
Mm-hmm.
And then you tackled Sutton?
No, it was big number 33.
Oh, Javonte.
Yeah, he put his, like, if you look at the video, like, he lowered his head. He put his head down, and then, like, hit the top of my shoulder.
Oof, gotcha. But, I mean, that's just such a bonus for corners because, and Richard Sherman, I've always said I thought Richard Sherman was the best tackling corner in NFL history. A lot of people say, no, it was this guy, that. But I mean, that's kind of, it's not really so much in the job description to come up and blow somebody up.
Yeah.
So when you do that at corner, it's just a bonus, man. I love that.
No, I appreciate it.
Mean, you set the tone, basically, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, tell us about, you know, kind of some... You know, you had a penalty, and then you came back and played it really well. And, I mean, I felt like it was that's a necessary thing to happen. You got to learn from your mistakes. And it seems like – does it feel that way that, like, okay, now I know what not to do? How much did you learn in that game, I should say?
How
much you can grab.
And just, you know, how tic-tacky the refs can be sometimes. Just because earlier in the game, dude ran a fade ball, but it was just like a runoff, just so like, it was running the ball, so he just ran me off. And I remember pressing him, and then like down the field, I just gave him like a little press, like job. And the ref was like, oh, you can't do that, blah, blah. So I was like, okay. I mean, it was new to me, because at practice, we got refs there, and I rarely, you know, get like penalized. So whenever the first pass interference came, I didn't think it was a PI, because I looked both ways, like trying to at least adjust to the ball, and he was grabbing me. Right. So it was like one of those vet moves. You know, guys are vets, so they can sell it pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the second one, it was just an obvious one, but it was just me just trying to catch up on a guy. He was coming from across the field, and I seen it, and I ran to him, and then Russell threw the ball just, you know, downfield, so I just was trying to catch up, man. Yeah.
Did the older guys tell you maybe talk to the officials a little bit? Like, because I feel like the officials, I mean, they're usually the villains and everything, but they will help you. They'll say, because I had a couple times where I hit somebody, and they're like, hey, you do that again, I'm going to have to throw a flag on you.
Yeah.
They kind of, did you get any of that? Did you have any conversation with those guys?
Oh, no, nah, I was out there playing, to be honest. It's just, I just, you know, learn from my mistakes, and shoot, just this week I'll improve on it even more. But, you know, sometimes I'll talk to a ref in college, but as a rookie, I just be like, you know what, I mean, you know, have any, like, as much pull as a guy that's a star in the league. So
I gotcha. Yeah.
I just go out there and just go about my business.
That makes sense.
Yes, sir.
Two quick questions. Number one, could you hear your teammates next to you? What was the crowd noise like when you were out there?
Oh, yeah, no, it was crazy. I remember the first play on the defensive drive, they had called a play, and I was in the huddle. I'm like, huh? Like, I tried to put my ear inside, like, because the D-line, they all in there, and then it's like the secondary. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like on the outside of them. So I was just in the huddle, like,
a little too far away. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, because at practice, like, you at the right distance, like you close and you're looking at him, you can hear him. And then in the game, you're looking at him and you think he just like mumbling or something. Or you just think his mouth moving, but no noise coming out.
Were you, I mean, was that at that point, do you get out there and you're like, okay, did I understand the play? Did I understand what we're doing here?
After that, like, first series, that kind of like went out the window a little bit because I just made sure Chenna, if I didn't hear it, just echo it to me because, like, he was closer to me. So I just was like, oh, okay, what's the call? I asked him if I didn't hear it in the huddle.
All right, well, congratulations on not only earning the starting job, but a very fantastic week one against Denver. Good luck in week two, Tariq.
We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right, he is Seahawks starting cornerback Tariq Woolen, also a starter as a rookie. Do not go anywhere. More of the huddle coming your way next.
This is the huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. Let's hear from the starting quarterback, Geno Smith, now.
Yeah, I think, in order to develop pocket presence, it just takes a lot of drill work. Our coach, quarterback coach, Dave Canales, and even Austin Davis, you know, they take us through a ton of drills. And, Coach Carroll likes to show it during the team meetings, just how those things show up. And so all the drill work that we do during the week, those things show up on game day. And obviously there's ways to improve and things that I can improve on as well, you know, with the pocket presence. But overall, it's just a ton of drill work and just, you know, repping over and over and over.
Is that one of those things, too, by experience, you know, if a guy comes free and hits you behind you, to know something, maybe that helps with the development, too?
Yes, of course. And we also talk about, like, the depth of your drops, you know, in the pocket and making sure you're not too deep because, obviously, you know, it makes it tougher on the tackles and things like that. So, being mindful of how deep you're getting on your drops as well as just, you know, climbing up into the pocket as well.
What did your phone look like Monday night, Tuesday morning?
Oh man, a lot of old friends, a lot of old coaches were texting me, and it was all positive stuff. And you know, I think people were really excited and just happy for me overall.
You get a record deal yet for your bars?
Not yet. Looking out for it though.
Hey, it's Pete's birthday, obviously. Today.
Yes.
You've been here 4 years now. What have you learned from him the most? Like, basically.
Well, first of all, shout out Coach Carroll. Happy birthday, Coach Carroll. And one thing that I've learned from Coach is just that mindset, you know, having that positive mindset, you know, always, you know, believing in yourself, believing in the guys around you, and then positive self-talk. Coach Carroll is one of the best coaches I've ever had, and I think one of the reasons is because he's so positive in that he truly believes, you know, that anything's possible. And just having a guy like that continuing to push us and having us compete every day, as well as just being positive, it's awesome.
Your right back statement got a lot of attention. Can you take us through again kind of the words you know that? I mean, you thought that up on the spot? Or?
Yeah, that was just spur of the moment. And, it really just means, I didn't respond or I didn't pay attention to anything that was said. But, you know, the wording and all that type of stuff just kind of came to me and really was just spur of the moment.
Monday was an emotional night. How do you kind of put those emotions aside now and focus on the 49ers and make sure that Monday night wasn't, you know, the emotional high of the season?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And, for us and me especially, I just went back to work the next day, you know, got right into the weight room and jumped right into San Fran and just diving into work. You know, that's the great thing about, you know, being in the NFL is every week is a championship week. And, you know, you're always going to have a tough opponent. And, you know, you really it's not about what you did last week. It's what you do in the present moment. And so for us, it's about, you know, like you said, not riding that emotional high and just continuing to focus on the work and the process, and then, you know, as the games come along, expecting to win, and then just getting back to work.
49ers defense and their front seven in particular, a lot of weapons there. How do you attack defense like that?
You know, you gotta goes back to, you know, what he said about, you know, working the pocket and being, you know, being really strong in the pocket. You know, they have a great front seven. They have a great defense overall, and another test for us as an offense is going to test our offensive line, going to test our running backs and protections. And so, you know, really for us, it's, you know, doing what we do best, controlling what we control, and playing our game, but also being mindful that they do have a lot of great guys on that side.
What's the challenge in the balancing act between taking shots downfield and then just sort of taking what the defense gives you and kind of, you know, I guess trying to make sure you do take some shots at times, but also trying to be careful with the ball?
Yeah, you know, the main thing is just, like you said, taking what the defense gives you, you know, whether it's downfield, intermediate, or in the short game. You know, in this previous game, they were playing, you know, more of a shell defense, so they weren't going to allow us to take shots. And it's best that we don't try and force those things, and we just stay efficient and stay on schedule, and, you know, you can win that way as well. And so it's just really about what the defense is giving you, the looks they're giving you, the leverage, and all that type of stuff.
What flexibility does the three tight ends give your offense?
Yeah, those guys have done an amazing job, and they all have a tremendous skill set. And so what they give us is the opportunity to, you know, switch up personnel and still be able to run the same type of offense and still be effective. So when you got guys like Noah, who, you know, is a tight end hybrid slash receiver, he's got speed, he's got hands, he's got routes, as well as Kobe Parkinson, you know, and Will Disley the same. You know, you can line up in a multitude of formations and, you know, different personnel and still be able to run your same offense.
How often have you run three tight ends at one time in your career?
We've done it a bunch, and it's more so in the NFL, you know, game than it is in college. And I think it's really effective if you got the right guys, and you can, you know, you kind of manipulate some of the calls to the defense.
You said after the game, people maybe forgot you could run or whatever. Have you been timed in the 40 lately? Are you as fast as you were when you were at West Virginia or anything?
I don't know. I haven't timed the 40 or anything like that. I still feel fast. You know, I still feel like I'm moving pretty fast out there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people might have forgotten I can run or might not have. You know, I just, you know, said that. But I still feel pretty good out there when I'm running.
Took a couple big hits on those back-to-back runs. How did you feel Tuesday morning?
I felt pretty good. I was in the weight room, you know, I was just hitting the weights and, you know, kind of got back to my routine. You know, I've never been a guy who's gotten extremely sore after games. You know, I don't know if that's adrenaline or just, you know, being used to taking hits and just playing and stuff like that. So I felt pretty good after the game, and, you know, hopefully that continues.
You know, passer rating has its flaws as a stat, but four of your best 10 passer rating games of your career have come in your last four starts here. Does that kind of speak to some of the progression you feel you've made as a passer through the years and your handling the position?
You know, I think it could be or it could not be. I don't know. I think that's a kind of a stretch to say that, but you know, I do realize that I've been more consistent lately, and you know, the passer rating and all that type of stuff, you know, you don't really want to look too far into that because the wins are what matter. But I think it just comes from consistently taking completions and trying to keep the team on schedule and just, you know, doing the right things.
What was the difference between the offense in the first half and the second half on Monday?
You know, I think the difference between our offense in the first half and the second half was, you know, the number of possessions. I think we only had about three possessions in the second half. Obviously, we didn't convert the third downs that we were converting in the first half, as well as, you know, had a penalty that kind of stalled our drive there. So overall, I just think it was the lack of possessions and then some things that we could have executed a lot better. You know, I could have stepped up in the pocket and really protected our tackle, Charles Cross. But, you know, both of those guys did a great job in the game. And, you know, I think if I step up a little bit more in the pocket there, you know, may not take that sack and may not get hit.
How are you supposed to know that pressure is coming when you've got your back turned to it? I mean, people talk about having a feel for that, but how do you actually feel it when you can't see it?
You know, it's tough. You know, that's the hard part about playing quarterback is that, you know, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. But what I can do is, like I said, step up in the pocket and just make sure that when I am taking my drops, I'm not too deep to where they get an edge on our tackles and have that, you know, opportunity to come around there.
You're going into the West Virginia Hall of Fame. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, I know it means a lot to my family. You know, just going to college, you know, was a big thing for me. And obviously, you know, had a lot of great memories there. And, you know, just to be honored in this way is extremely special to me.
Did you train with DK at all in the offseason, his rookie year, before he, like, got to the season?
Yeah, we had a couple sessions. He was down there training with this, you know, receiver coach guru type of guy, and got a chance to meet him. And I mean, I was impressed from the very first day I met him. And you know, we always kind of connect in the off season ever since then.
Besides how big he was, what else maybe stood out about him when you first met him?
Just his suddenness, and the, you know, big guys like that really rarely do they move the way he does, and are, you know, have the quick twitch and the footwork that he has. And so just for, you know, a guy to be that big, that explosive, and to be able to shut it down the way that he does, I think it's rare.
Anything else?
Thank you.
One more thing, man. Shout out Jamal Adams, man. You know, praying for a speedy recovery. Need you back. Thank you.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and Stacey Ross. We have a full hour coming your way next. Voice of the Seahawks, Steve Vrabel, is going to join us. We're getting to get an opponent preview coming up at 1:30. But before then, we are going in the trenches with Ray Roberts. Don't go anywhere.